There's a lot that could impress you about the all-new Honda Prologue EV. True, it's got class-leading passenger space and clean, thoughtful design and intuitive technology. But what really sets the Prologue apart from the competition is that it's more than an EV. It's a Honda. Honda, the power of dreams. Visit Honda.com/Prologue to learn more.
He has to pay the iron price. He has to pay the iron price. I'll never respect you while he lives.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Choppers, mercy, ill and pain to hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood of the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar to Harris, all men must serve. See as a raven flies, and time slips by. Valar Morghulis, all men must die.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast brought to you by Bald Move. We're the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
And tonight we're doing the Instant Take podcast where we just watch the episode and spit the fire about the Lion and the Rose.
Yeah, episode two.
Episode two. A lot of shit goes down for an episode two.
For an episode two, this was wildly exciting, I think.
I'm going to, as the book reader, take a back seat and just ask okay. you, on a scale of one to Robb Stark, how shocked were you? Or let's say Ned Stark, because you had that Robb spoiled. On a scale of one to Ned Stark, okay. How shocked were you that they brought out the death of Joffrey?
It was Ned Stark level of shocked. And the way they did it, I did not see that coming, despite probably... I should have seen that coming. Poisoning is a very common thing in the medieval world.
True.
excuse me. But I didn't see it coming, and so it was very shocking. And it was a character whose death I've been hotly anticipating mm-hmm. for seasons now.
Other than Viserys, I'm trying to think of a more hated character in a show. I mean, Ramsay Bolton.
For me... I can tell you my most hated living character now is Melisandre. I hate her.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that in a bit. Let's explore your thoughts on Joffrey. You were completely unprepared.
Completely.
And
yeah,
this was totally. His moment of triumph. I mean, no one, not even Tywin, because it was in a public situation, could dare check him. And he kind of, I don't know. I mean, talk about that. I just basically want you to talk more about the events.
I can tell you how I feel about this entire wedding, because when Joffrey started in on Tyrion, I thought, okay, he's going to give him another ribbing like he always does. Mm-hmm. Joffrey has a tendency to go overboard and is cruel. I didn't expect him to go as far as he did, though.
Because it was bad.
The stuff with the wine, and then the stuff when they brought out the other dwarves, and he told Tyrion to go down there and fight amongst them. It was absolutely disgusting. And if I hadn't been rooting for his death then, or if they hadn't given me his death then, I would have been rooting for it anyway.
You know, and it's interesting because I thought that him and Sansa did a lot of bonding over this. Like
Tyrion and Sansa?
Yeah. I mean, she just got to see, I think, how cruel he is. It wasn't just to her, but and she took a lot of shots in that too. I mean, they really disrespected Rob as long as, you know, Sir Loras did not appreciate the jabs at his former lover.
Who is Sir Loras?
I'm sorry,
Cersei's new soon-to-be husband.
Yeah, the renowned pillow biter.
Yeah, yeah.
I am surprised they didn't cut any reactions to Brienne, or maybe they did and I missed it.
I don't think so.
Because I had kind of a debate in the preseason cast with some listeners saying, they're like, well, Joffrey's going to die in episode two. And I'm like, no, no, surely it's going to be like four or five.
It was surprising how early it happened.
But yeah, the Double D's don't give a fuck. They are just tearing through the material.
And that's why it was so effective to me and so surprising, because I wasn't expecting it. I would have expected something like this in a season, like an episode eight for the season.
Right.
Like, this is a big event, and something that I think a lot of the fans have been wanting to see as well. I certainly enjoyed the final shot with him, of the scene, with him just red-eyed, bleeding from the nose, puking his guts up.
It
looked horrifying.
His death was brutal. I don't know how they did it. Probably CG or maybe contact, but they had his eyes looking in two different directions.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's like he was turning purple before our eyes and blood coming out of every orifice in his head.
Yeah, and I really just thought he was choking at first. I was like, oh, Jamie or somebody's going to have to run over here and save him. That was not the case. He just straight up died.
It's interesting that you did jump right to poison. Why do you think, what if he did just choke?
What I thought was happening there is after all of his grandiose torturing of Tyrion, he was going to be knocked down a peg by choking on a stupid cake.
So it's kind of like the Fifth Element style.
What do you mean?
You know where when the Zorg choked in front of Bilbo?
Oh yeah,
Bilbo Baggins.
Sure, Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Just like that. I thought the
Commissioner
they were
Gordon was choking in front of Bilbo Baggins, and Bilbo had to give him a tracheotomy with Sting.
I thought that is what was going to happen here, and they were just knocking him down. Well, they knocked him down and out. I didn't expect it.
So I'm going to ask you for some implications or how this rearranges the Game of Thrones in the full cast, because it's not fair to just ask you up front.
There's a lot that could impress you about the all-new Honda Prologue EV. True, it's got class-leading passenger space and clean, thoughtful design and intuitive technology. But what really sets the Prologue apart from the competition is that it's more than an EV. It's a Honda. Honda, the power of dreams. Visit Honda.com/Prologue to learn more.
Okay.
Melisandre.
Ugh.
You hate her.
Ugh.
Go.
I hate her, A, because she's magic. I don't really like magic.
Okay.
A couple of boring spots in this episode for me. One being Melisandre stuff, the other being Bran stuff. I don't like...
Burning at the stake, boring.
Not boring, just stuff that I'm not interested in. I don't care about your gods. I don't care about your sacrifices to them. I don't care about your shadow babies. Like, all of that stuff can be left out of Game of Thrones, in my opinion. I like the swords. I like the politics. I like that kind of stuff.
All right.
Real world stuff, but this magic stuff, not so much. So I hate her for that reason. I also hate her because she's got to be the most smug, arrogant, close-minded character I've seen in this entire series. And that's saying a lot in Game of Thrones.
Okay.
She doesn't listen to reason whatsoever. She's dead set on pleasing her gods, who we have no idea what they want. She just tells us what they want and does it.
It does seem like she's got, she burnt the leeches and all these kings are dead now.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, maybe the gods are giving her power to control Westeros.
She had a shadow crawl out of her twat.
Uh-huh.
I'm
not saying her magic is not real.
Right.
And that she has reason to be confident. Okay, I'm just saying I don't like characters who act that way. And Joffrey was one of them.
Yep.
Even though he was clearly not powerful, other than his title. And Melisandre is the other. And I don't like either of them. I'm glad one of them's dead.
What do you think of her conversation with Stannis' daughter, whose name is Shireen?
It felt like she was trying to justify her actions a little bit. Because the daughter was questioning them. Mm. Like, I heard the people screaming and stuff like that. I forget the second half of that conversation, though. I don't remember exactly what it was. Something about the good, the light god and the dark god, and like hell isn't the only hell, or something like that.
With the hell, I guess in the Lord of Light religion, there is no hell except for the one we live in, the Earth. This episode, I thought, did a ample job of describing between last episode and this episode of why Westeros is a hell. Especially now that, say what you will about Joffrey, but the realm at, if you're one of the small folk, the realm at peace is probably your preference. And him dying is, who, like I said, I'm going to ask you about this in the full cast, but.
I do want to speculate on who might have done this.
All right, let me hear you.
It seems
do you think it's Tyrion?
Fuck no. I don't think it's Tyrion. And it would be...
He was holding the cup.
Right.
He had the means, the motive, the opportunity.
Yeah, so obviously the genius Cersei thinks, oh, it's Tyrion. No, it's not Tyrion. There's no way it's Tyrion. It seems to me like it's Oberyn. He gave that menacing speech to Tyrion last episode about repaying debts. And then here we have it. The king is dead now. And I think that... is punishment to Tywin taking out his grandson, the king. It just feels like that's a likely scenario. Also, I'm curious though, because when the fool comes up to Sansa and says, hey, you need to get out of here now or you won't get out of here alive. That's also interesting. And I don't know who he's allied with, like his allegiances. I don't know where, like if he was the one to produce the poison, I don't know where that would be coming from.
Hmm.
Possibly, what is the queen's name? God, I don't remember. It starts with an M.
Marjorie.
Possibly her mother or grandmother, whoever the older lady is.
The Queen of Thorns.
Queen of Thorns,
Lady Olenna.
Exactly. Maybe her? I don't know. There are several candidates, for sure. There's not just one person who might want him dead.
Indeed. Quality speculating there, Jim.
Okay.
What else do we need to talk about? I gotta say... I love the scene between Oberon and Tywin. Like, that was a verbal sword fight.
Yep. Between two formidable guys.
Between two highly formidable, skilled players. Who won?
Oh, man. Maybe Oberon.
Yeah, I was surprising to myself giving the card to Tywin. Like, I was scoring it, you know, and I'm like, he's going to win, like, on a 10-9. Split decision.
Yeah.
But that last thing about where he shut Cersei and that he was fighting 2-on-1 too, because his paramour, Miss Sand,
bastard.
Yeah, it wasn't offering up a lot of assistance to him other than looking down on the Westeros custom of looking down on bastards.
Yeah.
But I thought when he brought it around at the end and said, you know, some places are different. Some look down on the great ones look down on the small and others hold murdering innocent women and children as distasteful. It's a good thing your daughter is with the latter.
Zing.
So it's like, reminding them all that he's got their daughter hostage.
Yeah.
And his, you know, Tywin, your granddaughter's hostage. And I'm better than you. And your shit, you may shit gold, but it stinks. I thought it was an impressive performance.
Yeah, there's also a lot in this episode about shitting gold, but I think Tywin knows they're not actually shitting gold. I mean, he's not super concerned about it because he tells Lady Olenna that he's not super concerned about it.
That's exactly that exact quote. I'm not super concerned.
Yeah. So he tells her that, but there's a lot in this episode about the troubles with money that they're having, I think.
Yeah, the Iron Bank of Braavos wanting their due. I mean, you don't get a name like the Iron Bank for lenient lending policies.
And that is, I don't know about at the end of this episode, but during the wedding at least, that is still Tyrion's responsibility, right?
He's master of coin. Far as we know. Of course... It seems like his new office is going to be one of the black cells going forward.
Yeah, Ned Stark's old cell.
Ned Stark's old residence.
In these podcasts, do we consider next time on Game of Thrones spoilers?
I would, yeah.
You would? Okay, because on HBO Go, they don't show those at all.
Right. So. yeah, and you're not... That's my turf. Stay out of my territory, Jim.
Okay.
The other, speaking of, go ahead.
I wanted to talk about one more face-off while we're on Tywin and Oberyn. Right. There's another face-off between Cersei's soon-to-be husband, whose name I still can't remember even though you said
Loras.
It. Loras. And Jaime in this episode about, you know, basically who loves Cersei more. Who's going to get Cersei in the end? And I think Loras won that battle as well.
Because Jaime didn't have a response.
He didn't. And Loras took off looking triumphant, so.
Where do you see that going?
I feel like Jaime, this guy might try to marry Cersei anyway, Loras might. and then Jamie's going to have to deal with him. I don't know, unless there's also some love triangle stuff developing between Brienne and Cersei and Jamie. So
yeah, let's okay. We talked about that in the last podcast.
Yeah,
and I shared my feelings. I'm kind of a light Brienne Jamie shipper. It's a lot of nuance to that relationship.
Yeah.
Did you take Brienne's face at the end of being like shocked and like, you crazy lady, or oh god, I've been caught, I've been found out?
I don't feel like she thought she was found out, but I don't know. It seems like maybe she doesn't even realize that she has a thing for Jamie at this point. Is that possible?
It's possible. I got to take my hat off to Gwendolyn Christie because I think she gave the equivalent of a mildly interesting performance. Like, if you tend to believe that her and Jamie have something, even on a subconscious level, and I'm one of those, that I don't think they understand it, there's some kind of attraction, it might not be physical, it might not even be sexual or romantic, but there is some sort of attraction there, then you can see that as concern that, you know, she's caught or I don't even know how I'm feeling. You could take it as this lady be crazy and I need to extract myself from here delicately.
Yeah.
There's so many ways you could take it because she just basically stared into the camera.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just staring into the camera. I mean, I've seen people stare into the camera.
Yeah.
Walking Dead, people stare in the camera all the time because they don't know what the fuck to do.
But they're just staring.
They're
into the
just
camera.
Staring at the camera. This is staring with purpose.
Yeah, there's something going on behind her eyes.
And in the eyes, and I think it's part of the direction and you know, Alex Graves, a veteran of many things, including many episodes of Game of Thrones, does a very good job. There's actually a couple of very puzzling edits, I thought, that we'll talk to.
Okay.
I've almost forgotten everything that happened with the Boltons because the last episode was such an impression. I completely forgot that we saw a woman get torn apart by hounds.
We did, yeah.
While that she was hunted for sport.
I don't know what that scene was about at all.
Okay.
I mean, does it just show more of Ramsay's sinister streak, his cruelty, his...
Well, I mean, they're doing... I don't know, man. They're doing the demonstration of how far Ramsay is broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how far... You know, contrasting him and Rob and the Stark children hunting in the woods of Winterfell versus him hunting with his fellow bastard, Bolton. But, you know... Again, I thought he did a very good staring performance at the end and the shaving scene. And, you know, that's another thing I want to ask you to speculate on in the full cast. I just want to make mention of it, but that was a really strong scene too, but it just completely got eclipsed by the stuff that came later.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
I felt like there was one other thing I wanted to talk about. But on the other hand, it did feel like we got pretty good coverage.
How about Bron and Bron teaching Jamie to fight again?
Well, how about it?
How about it? I love it. I mean, I've always wanted to see more of Jamie's sword skills because we don't get a lot of that in the series. We just hear about it.
Right.
And if he can get back to even a shadow of what he was with his other hand, I'll be impressed.
Yeah.
And I think Bron's a good guy to do it.
Right. I mean, I was thinking, while I was watching that scene, I was like, okay, what am I supposed to be getting here? Is the fact that Bron is clearly kind of toying with him and just kicking his ass up and down the practice floor. But on the other hand, it seems like, you know, Jamie doesn't, it's not like he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
It's just that hand is completely untrained. He, in his arrogance, has never bothered to, you know, like he said, a good sword fighter is decent with both hands. Like, he's never done that. He's been so naturally gifted from such a young age and such a prodigy that he's never bothered to round out his skills. But I don't think he was just being embarrassed. It's not like, you know, Bron disarmed. I don't know. Bron's in a tricky position too, because Jamie's a proud man. If he just completely humiliates him and beats him the shit out of him every single time, you wonder how much of that Jamie can take.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Will Smith's kid and Mr. Miyagi situation here, where you kind of have to teach him a lesson and humiliate him a little bit,
right?
So that he learns that lesson.
So he can get softened up to be able to be taught, right?
Yeah, but then you don't want to. You don't want to push him past his breaking point, even with a blunted sword or an unedged sword. I thought it felt to me like Jamie here is very, like you said, he's a very proud person. Mm-hmm. He hates feeling this helpless after having been such a good swordsman. He doesn't like being helpless. And he also doesn't, I think, like learning from this person who's not a nobleman or is now, I guess, but wasn't at one point.
Right. And speaking of his feeling helpless, I really liked his performance at the end where Joffrey was dying and him, you know, the boy's father and mother both hovered over him, which would be kind of a natural touching scene, but no one knows except for those two. And he clearly, you know, he already is talking about how can I protect the king? I don't have this hand now. You know, what happens now? So, what'd you think of the episode, just as from an enjoyment as a viewer aspect?
I really like the stuff with Ramsay and his father and Theon. Love the stuff at the wedding. All of the wedding was just great.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff in the middle, kind of the magical stuff, the stuff with Bran and the stuff with Melisandre, doesn't really interest me. So...
Well, I don't have I don't have that weakness, so I thought it was an incredibly strong episode start to finish and breathtaking season episode two for the season.
If they had pulled Bran and Melisandre out and replaced it with Dany, 100% this episode is amazing.
Didn't even make it over to much stayed on the continent of Westeros, and except for a few breaks in the early going, stayed at the They call this the purple wedding.
The purple? Why?
I don't know.
Because of his face turning purple at the end?
I think that might be. I just, you asked me that, and as the words are half out, I'm like, shit, I don't know why they call it the purple wedding.
Okay.
And I was, well, I was like, is there some kind of, because in the books, it takes place in this big hall, and I always imagined it being darker and kind of, you know, lit by torchlight, and the fact it was out in broad daylight, I thought was an interesting choice.
Yeah.
But a good one. But I was thinking, oh shit, were there like purple drapes on the wall? Was Joffrey wearing purple? Why? But yeah. You're probably right. It was his face. I don't know. Maybe someone more steeped in the internet side of the lore can let me know for the full cast, which I think we're done. I'm not going to ask you about Bran plugging into the Weirwood.net. We'll save that for the
couldn't
full
even
cast.
Get a .com for that.
No, it was taken.
Yeah, to be fair,
it was taken. So that's it. Unless you got something else to say.
No, I'm good.
If you'd like to send us full feedback for our full cast that comes out Tuesday night, do so at GameOfThrones@baldmove.com. Of course, you can always interact with us directly on Facebook.com/baldmove, and Jim holds down Twitter @baldmove. That's all we got. Thanks for listening. We'll be back Tuesday with our full coverage for Game of Thrones and Mad Men. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Good night.
You have to pay the iron price. I'll never respect you while he lives it.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey's thirsty, yelling pain to hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood of the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar Dohaeris, all men must serve. The raven flies, and time slips by. Valar Morghulis, all men must die.